Calling all detectives. When I rented a typewriter at the library, I discovered I didn't have to look under M to find murder. That is the situation on this page from my casebook. The casebook of Jerry Browning, private detective. Every so often, a private detective like me, Jerry Browning, gets a case that's one for the books. I walked from the main reference room of the Gardner Library into the newspapers and periodicals division. I picked up a magazine and sat down. It was a fine magazine. And along toward the back, I came across the picture of an old wood-fired locomotive. The accompanying article was entitled, The Romance of Railroading. It was something that my friend Wilbur Norris of the Great Valley Line would enjoy. I walked to the desk. Here's my card. I'd like to borrow this magazine. There's an article in here, Romance of Railroading, that I want to copy for a friend. Sorry, sir, magazines do not circulate. However, if you wish to copy a section of it, we have rental typewriters available for that purpose. You'll find one in the next room. But first, sign this slip. I signed the slip, went into the adjoining room, picked up some sheets of paper, passed a girl trying to translate her business college shorthand, a man who looked like a struggling author, and finally found a place next to a character who was staring at the blank page in his machine. On the typewriter, I noticed a little card. This is a coin-operated typewriter. Place dime in slot for 30 minutes typing. Just then I heard a click that meant that my neighbor's half hour was up. I expected to see him get up or fish out another dime. But he didn't move, because his time was really up. The man was dead. While using a coin-operated typewriter in the library, I discovered a dead man at the next machine. The business college girl and the fellow who looked like an author didn't appear to notice anything out of the way. Time was money to them, and they went right on typing, even while I was talking to the attendant.
I want to thank you, Mr. Browning, for your most discreet behavior. It would be dreadful had you caused a commotion. A library must preserve an atmosphere conducive to contemplation. As you requested, I notified Mr. Clayton, our executive director. This is he coming in the door now.
Henry Clayton introduced himself to me, then turned his attention to the dead man.
Gracious, it's Stephen Polk, one of our regulars.
Yeah? Who was he?
A fine scholar. Stephen Polk was an excellent researcher. He compiled the material for the syndicated cartoon series, Mysteries of History.
I knew the cartoon strip. Who didn't? But I had no more time to question Clayton about it, for just then a man with a black bag walked in. The man and woman typists finally realized that something was wrong. They quit their work and stared at us. The doctor bent over Polk's body. When he straightened up...
Curious. Rigor mortis is well established. This man has been dead for at least 2 hours.
That's impossible.
Young man, are you challenging my professional opinion?
No. I mean the time element is impossible. I pointed to the typewriter. There's a clock device in these things. I heard Polk's machine click off at the end of the half-hour period a dime buys. So if he was dead 2 hours ago, someone else had reason to put money in his machine. And that someone is a murderer. We called the police. They took the body away, and a sergeant herded the rest of us into the library director's office. The girl gave her name as Geraldine Bowen, said she frequently used the library as a place to practice her typing and shorthand lessons. Yes, she had met Stephen Polk many times in the typing room, noticed nothing unusual about him today. The other typist gave his name as...
Phil Anglin, I'm a playwright, and I think I've finally sold a show. At least I've got three backers.
Clayton, the director, looked at him coldly.
Very interesting, Mr. Anglin, but hardly the proper time for self-congratulations. I'm sure the police would rather you told them when you saw poor Stephen Polk come into the typing room.
But I didn't see him come in. He was already there when I walked in. Miss Bowen here can verify that.
She did. And then... Clayton reached for the phone, but the sergeant waved him away.
Sergeant O'Meara speaking. Oh, that's what the M.E. said, huh? Oh. Yep, I'll close the joint tighter than a drum. I'll bring everybody in the library to headquarters. Well, folks, we've got bad news from the medical examiner. Stephen Polk was poisoned, and all of you are under suspicion of murder. Nobody's to leave this room till I get back.
After the sergeant went out, probably to arrange for our transportation to headquarters, I looked at the unhappy faces around me, saw that Anglin was burning.
They can't do this to me. I'm in the clear. Miss Bowen proved it.
Sit down, Anglin. The whole thing will be straightened out as soon as you tell your story at headquarters.
You bet it will. I'll tell them how I heard Polk in the main reading room screaming at this guy.
He spun around, pointed a finger wildly at Gibson, the attendant. Gibson turned a fiery red, but I moved in fast. Boys, before you start mixing it up, let me ask a question. I turned to Clayton. Mr. Clayton, do you happen to know what Polk was working on?
I believe it was contemporary sources, newspapers, magazines, pamphlets.
I used the interoffice line on Clayton's phone, located Sergeant O'Melia, and finally got him to listen to me. In a couple of minutes...
I got it, Browning. The slip Polk signed. It was for a dinky little pamphlet. There's some play called The King's Crown, written back in the 17th century by a guy named Anon. The pamphlet hasn't been returned, and it wasn't on Polk when the boy took his body away. You suppose he hid it someplace?
Sarge. His murderer did. Grab him, Sergeant. Grab Anglin. The sergeant acted fast, stopped Anglin from taking the same stuff he'd given Polk in a poisoned candy bar. Sure. We got his confession. Anglin had made friends with Polk just as Geraldine Bowen had. He learned that Polk had come across that anonymously authored play and intended eventually to utilize it in the Mysteries of History series. Anglin got agitated, for this was the same play he'd swiped and pawned off as his own. He knew that when the thing was publicized, he'd be finished as a playwright. So, when he saw Polk request that pamphlet, Anglin waited for him in the hall, fed him the candy he'd already poisoned. And when Polk died in the isolated typing room, Anglin fed bunches of dimes into the machine to give himself a time alibi. Then Anglin couldn't resist coming back later to watch his perfect crime develop. But what really gave him away was that stupid attempt at planting suspicion on Gibson. When Anglin said Polk had been screaming in the reading room, I knew it was a lie. Gibson would have died rather than let anyone raise his voice in the library. Like I said, there were some cases that are strictly for the book. And even silence can speak volumes.